I've been with this fellowship since 1987, and I'm one of the stickers. I stayed. I took a few notes because I'm from New York and I can talk. If you can't hear me, or if you haven't need some help, if you wave, one of the people who's in the room who knows me will get my attention because my notes are on screen, so you'll see me looking at the notes. I adapted the fourth step prayer from the Big Red Book, page 71. And if you take a minute with me to pause for the sick and suffering, for those who are struggling today in and out of the rooms, I'd appreciate that now. Divine Creator, help me to be rigorously honest and to care for myself during this process. Let me practice gentleness and not abandon myself on this spiritual journey. Help me remember that I have good attributes. Please help me to honor you, God, to be of service to others, and to be kind to myself. Your will, not mine, be done. And that's page 71 of the Big Red Book. Okay, what I was like, 5 minutes. Gabby, let's do this. Thanks for supporting me today. I appreciate you. My notes say opinionated, lacking self-awareness, afraid, headstrong, and determined. And that tells my whole story. I was espoused to the idea that if something was going on in my house, I would know about it. And I wasn't afraid to tell you that if something was going on in your house and you didn't know about it, there was something wrong with you. And I was wrong. I was way wrong. What I didn't know was that I believed in absolute truth because I was raised by a bully. And the only time that absolutely things only go one way is when there's a bully in charge. And I learned that from the people here. But this challenge for me still today is to tell my story without breaking the anonymity of my beloveds, because I don't want them to tell my story later. I know that their perspective and what happened to them as a result of my illnesses affected them deeply in both directions, both generations. And so I'm hoping that if I show some grace to my qualifiers, that someday some grace will be shown for me. If you ever have any questions or you want to contact me one-on-one, I don't shy away from my truth. I just want you to know that that's where I still struggle. So I'm in my 60s. I'm somebody's grandma. I'm a double winner. So my primary addiction was pills, but I didn't know it. And I like shiny people. I like exciting, eclectic, shiny people. So for me, going into NA meant finding dealers and landing flat on my face over and over again. And two women from AA said, "Hey, why don't you come with us and sit down and shut up? You don't know anything about recovery anyways. Just say, my name is Lynn, I'm an alcoholic, and be quiet." And so I worked the steps the first time in their kitchen. And held a lot of shame about that. I didn't think I was an alcoholic. I believe that clean is clean. However, I didn't really qualify. And every now and then, when my truth would come out, I'd get thrown out of the fellowships. So I walked into a church because I was trying to do right and make up for my addiction. I had two small children and a husband, and I couldn't stay sober. And so I did a lot of good deeds in the hopes that that would somehow pay a penance and make it right, and the universe would just grant me something. And I walked into a church to drop off some donations that I didn't belong to. And there was a sign on the door that said adult children. And that day I had been having a hissy fit all morning. And I decided I was an adult who acted like a child. So, in my usual fashion, in 1987, I went to the meeting late and left early with the hopes of never having to meet any of you. I just wanted whatever the answer was and get the hell out, right? I'm smart. I'm book smart. I'm not real common sense smart. That's just my truth. That's not a condemnation. I just am academic in some kind of weird way. I can take tests. And so that's what I plan to do. And I bought a whole lot of books. And I went to about six meetings, five meetings before I actually got there on time. And they read that opening and I heard the word alcoholism. And I left there and I raged. And I broke plates and I threw things in my kitchen and I slammed things against the walls and I broke a door off the hinge when I got home because I just didn't want it to be about alcoholism one more time. I just couldn't handle one more time. I'm the oldest in my family. I have two other siblings, and because I'm the oldest and there's an age separation of 9 years and 13 years, I'm the one who met all the great uncles and all the great aunts. So my grandparents, all four of them, had more than nine siblings each, and I got to go to all those funerals before I was 14. And when I was 32, I went to the funeral of my great aunt, and I had a meltdown. I had a complete meltdown. They decided to have her memorial in a pub, and my one uncle who was still remaining brought his accordion, and I knew that that would be the last time I would hear them play music. When I was a kid, they played, and the enablers in my family did a great job of hiding the disaster of alcoholism from me. So I knew that it was music and it was exciting and it was people building catapults and playing football over the house, and it was loud and they were having fun and they were dancing. I hear my timer. I'm going to take one more minute to wrap up and say I was confused about what alcoholism was because I saw creativity and people going out loud and proud in the world and doing things, and I saw criers. And I committed to not be a crier. I really felt that the women in my family were crazy and that they didn't know how to live. And so I got all wired wrong as a kid. I also was a kid in leg braces. My mother was terrified of that. And so she kept me near and dear, close to her apron. And I wasn't allowed to do things that other kids were allowed to do, even when I had the physical abilities. She was afraid that I would again dislocate my hips and wind up back in a body cast and back in leg braces. I wound up in a body cast because of the first alcoholic in my life, which was a man who was drunk who birthed that baby. That was me. And in his exuberance, he lifted me in the air, spun me around. Trigger warning. I'll give you a second. He spun me around. He dislocated my hips, wanting to slap my behind like they do on the movies. And so instead of handing me to my mother, they rushed me off to surgery and put me in a body cast for the first 18 months of my life. That was the story my mom clung to. And she also clung to the idea that I caused her nervous breakdown, not only when I was born, but then again when I learned how to walk and it wasn't time for me to walk, the doctor said. And she thought I was spiting her. And then again when I started smoking pot when I was 12. And now that I know how young a 12-year-old is, maybe it did cause her nervous breakdown. I don't know. But the fact that she needed to share those details with me has been a source of guilt and shame and difficulty for me for the next 40 years, to be very honest. Even in this fellowship, I struggled with that. Gabby, if you could give me another 5 minutes, I'm going to talk about what happened. So what happened was I married a man who was a gambler, and I was really ready to be married to an alcoholic. I had studied this even separately from my life. I didn't know that this existed. I'd gone to therapists and counselors and people because it seemed like I was the most broken branch on a perfectly good tree. Everybody else was employable and functioning and happy and partying, and I was just bouncing around everywhere. And we were constantly in debt, couldn't keep the lights on, kind of thing. And I couldn't quite put my thumb on what was wrong in my marriage. So I made the most logical decision, which was I was broken. And every time I would send myself out to get fixed, just like I did with my mom, I sent myself out to get fixed. It seemed like things got better. And the only thing that had got better was that I was away from the problems. And when I came back, the problems were still there. And, around and around we went. But as long as I blamed myself, as long as it was my fault, as long as I owned that responsibility, there was a chance I could fix it. And I had no idea that my desire to fix and rescue the family was my adult child issues. I had no idea that that was codependent. I had no idea that I had long since bought into don't talk, don't trust, don't feel. And so I came to meetings and I met five other people who were just like me. I think I came in as a teenager. I'd like to pick out where people are in the program. I'm sorry if you feel judged by that. It's just a game I play. I think we have four parts. I adhere to the idea of the child, the adult, the teen, and the spirit. the spiritual ones. And so the adults are the analytical, logical ones. We rely on them to run district meetings and come up with policies and committees and all kinds of stuff. But emotion and childlike wonder and fun are not real attainable, right? They're not problems to be solved. And the teens were like me, rebellious and reactive. I'm a leap before you look kind of girl. And so I will jump first. And I was sarcastic and bantery because the men in my family were harsh. They were honest, they were loving, but they were harsh. And so I knew how to do that. And it really served me well in my job, in employment, and in working in male-dominated fields. It served me really, really well. But all of Lenny's relationships, the one with myself, with other people, and with a God of my understanding or my misunderstanding, were not working. Straight up, just not working. And it wasn't easy to be around me, and I didn't care that you didn't like it because I was getting paid to do it. And I set the bar low so that I could always be right everywhere that I worked, and I wasn't afraid to take you on, period. And if you didn't come for me, I'd come for you. And that's where I was when I came into this fellowship. And I met five people just like me in the rooms of ACA. And we fought every week. We disrupted the hell out of those meetings. They voted us out. They had secret business meetings. They tried to find newcomers to come confront us, right? Because, what the people who come in, and this is my opinion, please take what you want and leave the rest. The people who come in their child, are the gentle hearts. It's not that they're childlike. They feel the stuff, right? And they're trying to be kind and they love everybody. And that's what leads with them. And then they'd send them in to us, the teens, who are like, kiss off, right? And break their little hearts. And had to make a lot of amends in those early meetings. But we would go for breakfast afterwards. And we would continue the argument into the parking lot, sometimes into the wee hours of the night. And the truth was, we were fighting for recovery. I know today that I come from the other laundry list. I also want you to know that my message of hope is that I'm not broken, I'm disconnected, and I don't think you are either. I don't think the source that made me can be broken. How could I not be disconnected? None, the truth never matched the facts, and the facts never matched the feelings, and the feelings never matched the people I trusted. When my mother found out what happened to me with one of my uncles, and I know you know what it is in a household where the party is on every absolutely every single weekend, where they work hard and they drink hard and they play hard, she said, "You're not going to bring that up again because your uncle's going to lose his job if people start talking about that." And I was in my 30s and in my 40s, still going, what? Right. And by then I had found Al-Anon. I have a dear friend in this fellowship. His name is Al. And he says when they come out with Al-a-tot, Al-a-dog, and Al-a-fish, we'll qualify for that too. And that's probably true. But my belief today is that this fellowship, ACA, is my core issue. And if I'm sober today, I need to be here. If I'm not sober, or if I'm romancing my addiction, I need to be there. And I need to get, I need to come to ACA with a sober mind so that I can open my heart and integrate the four parts of me. I needed to settle on four parts because the multiple voices of a loving parent or a critical parent or a false self or all the other things we talk about, the multiple wounded children, was pulling at my mental health. And I was really concerned that I was going to lose my mental health trying to identify those pieces. And so one day, with the help of two other fellow travelers, we got on the phone and we went to big meetings on Zoom, and we just started asking, in the chat, does anybody here know anything at all about integration? Where the hell are we going? Because we know what sobriety is, but we have no idea what clarity is. Where are we going? And the idea that my head, my heart, my gut reaction, and my spirit have always been with me, but they're disconnected, they don't work well together, really resonated with me. And the idea that if there is a God, he can't be it or he cannot be broken, that those pieces are disconnected, that this fellowship gives me opportunity to pick those four pieces up like a pipe, connect them, and maybe allow that life force to flow through me and serve the purpose that I was given for being here. Just maybe changed my life. So I'm going to move to the other. How did I work this fellowship? If you can give me another 5 minutes, Gabby, that'd be awesome. So I started with the big book of AA and I thumped it. I know page 449 is acceptance. I know page 86 is on awakening. I can quote paragraphs if that makes you feel better. And that's what I did. And then I refused to participate in the Red Book. Absolutely straight up refused. In my area in New York, we have what's called adult family groups, AFG. So if you're ever looking at an Al-Anon meeting list and you see an AFG for adult family groups, it's adult children. I was here when the Tony A literature came out. I was here when we all had the arguments about accept the literature, don't accept the literature, use the anger management tapes, don't use them. The coolest thing we used to do was for 10 minutes, our meetings would start with a spiritual center, and you could do whatever you wanted during that 10 minutes. So somebody might come in and bring candles or Tibetan bowls or tell you to bring yoga mats, or we'd lay on the floor, or we'd dance, or we'd chant, or we'd something. And we even went to spiritual places. I've been to sweat lodges, and I'm grateful to any human being who shares their spiritual center, because that gave me permission to break the loyalty to my family's religion. And I didn't know the difference between religion and spirituality. I also didn't know how to play. And there was something about taking a risk to light a candle or ring a bell or close my eyes with a bowl singing that felt like a secret club, the one that I never had as a kid growing up, the friends that I never got to play with, the kids who didn't share their toys. And I'm forever grateful to this fellowship for that time. If you get the opportunity to participate in that, I wouldn't miss it for whenever there's an in-person event and they have those windows of time where we can go visit or participate with other meditations or other vespers. And I've been to Whispers, I've been to the bridges, a love bridge. Love bridge still freaks me out. If you don't know what a love bridge is, they stand on either side of you and you walk through the middle of it. You can be blindfolded or not. And then if you close your eyes, they just quietly whisper the whole time you walk down, affirmations. But that's a lot for me. In a family that doesn't touch and doesn't hug. My father told me he loved me once. It was at my wedding. I cried for 2 hours and I had to leave my own wedding and come back because I was so overwhelmed at hearing him say those three words. That's how much it affected me to hear it. And so I missed 2 hours of my own reception because, and I didn't know why. I thought I was immature and inappropriate and all the things, right? I was embarrassed in my gown and had to leave and come back. Let me look at the notes for a second so that I stay on topic. I'm for the after that, I tried the yellow book and then I was really mad to find out that the yellow book is the red book. It's word for word the red book, right? And I was avoiding that red book, damn it. It's a big book. And I had already had, when I got my divorce, I had 67 self-help books. And I thought, who the hell's got 67 books? I did. I did. I had books from everything. There wasn't a pyramid you couldn't fix anymore, right? The healthy eating, the healthy living, healthy sleeping, healthy breathing, all of it. And I already had seen it because the kind of work I did, I had gotten to meet a goddess, a sheikh, and a guru. I love that stuff, but most of it was a spiritual bypass for me. It was just a way to go do things and not deal with Lenny because I had no idea where to start. The solution in that for me was the sensory breaks. And I avoided those for 15 years. 15? I just thought they're hippy dippy. Turns out I'm hippy dippy. Who knew? But I was working with a woman who said, you need to stop for 3 minutes and engage with your six senses. And so it's touch, taste, hear, seeing, smell. And then the sixth sense is an instinct, right? An intuition. If you have a gifting, you use that. If not, it's where am I peaceful? Where do I notice peace? And frankly, I didn't notice peace anywhere. I didn't know that for me, quiet and peace was a CPTSD problem. because the only quiet and the only peace I ever knew was right before the storm. And so when you all asked me to meditate or to sit still, I was going to make jokes. I was going to make fun, or I was going to have to remove myself. I was going to fidget and be loud and be embarrassed. And I would have to walk out every single time if I wanted to respect your space. And it took someone giving me an egg timer. Back in the day, your sponsor would give you a little timer and you'd crank it. You all got them on your phone now. It's fancy. But we used to give out those little manual egg timers. They make a lot of noise and they tick. They're still fun to have if you're sponsoring, get one. They're fun. They're still available. And set it for 1 minute and challenge myself to 15 seconds of quiet or 15 seconds of not moving or 15 seconds of safety. I didn't know that I hadn't had 15 seconds of safety in a very, very long time because my hypervigilance filled in where the silence left off. I think we're coming up on a timer, right, Abby? Is it what I'm seeing? Perfect. That's awesome. I appreciate you all putting up with that timer because otherwise I don't stay on track. So eventually I gave into that Red Book and grabbed two friends from this fellowship. Actually, one was from Al-Anon and one was from AA. And I said, hey, you want to go through this with me? And the three of us decided to do this at my kitchen table. And when we got to step four, it hurt. It really hurt. And their stories hurt me and my story hurt them. And the level of pain was gut-wrenching. And I'm not a big fan of the way that the Red Book lays this stuff out. And so back to the rooms we went to see, is there another way? And that's when I found the illegal book from, it's not illegal, it's not copyrighted, it's not published. It was written by members in Australia. And I am forever grateful to fellow travelers and to members who take a risk to put on paper and to share what their experience, strength, and hope is, or to share it in those speaker tapes. Right. And so I am a Tony A advocate now. I run a workshop doing the Tony A because I'm grateful to this fellowship. It's Tony A who helped me find my inner child. It's Tony A who taught me there is a difference between my addiction and my dysfunction, and they need a different solution. Because I tried with my best might to force those 12 steps to heal my wounded inner child. And I tried to sit down, shut up, and smile. But that's what I did my whole childhood. So it was comfortable. It wasn't comfortable to learn to love me. It wasn't comfortable to learn to be kind to me. If you'll allow me, I'm trying to see how much more time we have here. I would like to do a meditation that helps me focus on my inner child. And I'd love to have you join me in it. I've got it fired up here from YouTube. Hopefully, it misses the advertisements, and I will see if I can. Yes, I have the screen share ability. Sharing is not turned on. Can I ask the host to give me permission to share? Well, I'll send the request. There we go.
I'll just co-host you, Lynn. It's better that way.
You got it. Thanks, Terry. And this will help me kind of bring myself in, and then we'll get to talking about recovery. Click sound, click YouTube, click share. Thank you, everybody. If you could find someplace comfortable, take a couple of deep breaths. Here we go.
Where did you go, little one? You left me and I've come undone. Wasting our time on regret and things we can never forget. All of the things I've heard, you've heard them too, but you still believe that they're true. You're still here, always with me. Rooted down deep like a tree. Just give me your hand, my love. There's nothing wrong. Walk with me now and we'll sing a new song. 'Cause everything's alright. There's nothing to fix. Perfection and happiness aren't a good mix. Give us a smile, little one. Your light's as bright as the sun. Words masqueraded as truth have painfully tainted our youth. It's time to put down all those burdens you bore. We've lost some battles, but we'll win the war. And you're here always with me, rooted down deep like a tree. So give me your hand, my love, there's nothing wrong. Walk with me now and we'll sing a new song. Everything's all right, there's nothing to do. You've got the tools that you need to be you.
Thanks, everybody. I play that for you because I tried so hard. Oh, I still got sound over here. There we go. I tried so hard to find an inner loving parent and to be an inner loving parent. And Tonier's literature, or the Red Book, talks about what would a loving parent do? And my reaction every single time was, how the hell would I know? I just, even just to be kind, right? Like, get it done already. Suck it up. Do it. Put your head down. Keep moving. Don't talk. Don't trust. Don't feel. But what I found in taking sensory breaks, 5-minute sensory breaks once a day that I hated doing, I used to drive down. I live on Lake Erie. The background there is really where I live. My sponsor would say, go out and find something lovely. Feel something, touch something. And I would call her and bitch, pardon me, but I would just call her and say, I'm sitting at the damn lake. There ain't nothing nice here. I got 100 problems. I can't fix this. This isn't helping. 5 minutes of hippy dippy is not helping. And she'd say, do it again tomorrow. And I didn't have any other options. I'd already spent way too much money on fixing Lenny. And in one of my tirades about there is no loving parent, there's no such thing. You have to do, like, you have to do the dishes and you have to clean your room and you have to go to work and you have all this stress. And I don't know how to do relationships. I did a drawing and I drew a little girl, not very well, by the way, but she had a great big Valentine. And on the Valentine was BFF. And I had a moment of awakening that said, all my little girl ever wanted was for my mother to be her best friend. On the days when she was drug addicted and looking for pills to solve her problems, and on the days when her mood swings were all over the place, and on the days when she accused me of destroying her life, and on the days that were good, and on the days that were bad, I just wanted her to be my best friend. And I realized the only part of me that knows how to love was 7. That's the part of me that knew how to love. And then I need to tap into that little child. And so I went to my AA principals with my 2 friends who had been working the steps with me. And I said, I think we're praying for the wrong people. I think that with my addiction, I need to pray for the people I have resentments against. But with my wounded child, I need to pray for that 7-year-old. And I need to pray for that 3-year-old. And I need to pray for that 9-year-old who was assaulted. And I'm going to do it for 14 days the way AA says to do it. And I'm going to start over if I skip a day, but I'm going to for 14 days. And the reason we choose the age of 7 is 7 is the age of reason. So a child who's 7 understands right from wrong, and they understand friendships. They also understand that conversations have 2 parts, and they start to have some self-awareness and some body consciousness. And so 7 is pretty significant for most of us. You can pick any age you want. But as we started to bring this up at meetings and say, hey, what are you doing about this? Other people came forward who said, this is my wounded child at age 19. This is my wounded child at age 40. This is my wounded child at age 3. And we started to pray for each other's woundedness. Specifically, not for an inner something, for that person that was actually that age. And if you don't have a picture to hold on to, if you have something that represents that. So I went out and bought a Chinese jump rope because I was that kid who couldn't go outside and play, right? My mom kept me in because of her depression and because of her fear of that I would get hurt. But boy, oh boy, I wanted to be able to jump rope and to do those things. So I went and bought one and I would hang on to it and I would cry and I would pray and I would try to find out what is a 7-year-old look like. And that involved going to like websites and seeing what are the developmental milestones of a regular healthy 7-year-old. And I find out, you lose your first teeth and you're learning how to read, and most 7-year-olds can ride a bike and tie their shoes and they want to make friends and they find one other adult who's important to them, not necessarily in their home, can be a coach, a teacher, a neighbor, an aunt. And I'm like, that's who you were. And I could trust that 7-year-old. And I could trust my friends who were bantery and loud in these meetings because they were like me, even though the other people in these meetings were trying to vote us out and kick us out. My friend Al would say, I got this seat. This is my seat. You can't up and throw me out. So they we inv I like to think that we invented the breakout rooms. And because they sent us down the hallway, and our meetings would get so loud, they'd come down the hall and say, "You guys are too loud. You're still disrupting our meetings." And what really changed for me was two of the ladies who voted us out most vocally, gently, passively, kindly said, "Get out!" Right? They were the kindest human beings, but they made sure that enough people came to vote us out, came to our meeting at the other end of the hall. And my friend Al said, "What the hell are you doing here?" And I will never forget the day Pat said, "I have a sibling who's just like you. And maybe if I can sit through this meeting with you, I can learn what to do when they get loud and they get big." And that was the first time I was able to say, "I have a mom who's just like you. And she's gentle and she's quiet, but it feels like she's a puppeteer. It feels like behind the scenes, she pokes the bear and she manipulates the thing. And I don't trust people who are quiet or who are gentle or who are kind, not ever. And so there's never any kindness in my world. I only trust the people who are mean and direct and harsh." And she sat in our meetings and we began to have these discussions where we held space for each other. And we began to have meetings where we set timers to calm down. And some of the gentle people brought bean bags and pillows and sponges for us to throw. And they'd be like, "You can throw these, but please don't scream," right? And so it would get loud and they'd throw a bean bag. And we learned to love each other and to respect that we came from a different side of the same disease. And that changed everything. How are we doing on time here, Rich?
You have 11 minutes, 30 seconds.
Thank you so much. Gabby, can you give me 5? The next thing that's written here in front of me is a word about grief and forgiveness. There's two questions in the Tony A literature that says, question 12 says, can I forgive my parents? In order to forgive my parents, I must first learn to forgive myself. And question 13 says, can my inner child forgive my parents? This is imperative to begin coming out of blamelessness. And instead of forgiveness, I had to ask the question, can I allow my parents to be human? And in the beginning, the answer wasn't yes, because the hurt was too big and the grief was too much. And most of it came out of me in the form of rage. And so, some of you know I used to like to chop wood, And I chopped five cords of wood, and I moved it 3 times the year that I was doing the steps the first time. I hauled that stuff and I just threw it. And I didn't know what I was mad at. It wasn't clarity. It didn't help me. I just physically had to get that adrenaline out of my body because the inside drugstore was real for me. And I didn't know that I had to allow my inner child to tell me what she did wrong. And when I put my hand on my heart and I took the risk of looking in a mirror, only into my eyes, and saying, "What did you do? What did you do to ruin this family? What did you do to hurt your mom? What did you do that she couldn't get sober? Why did you cause all this pain?" Everything came up, the stuff. Everything from calling my little brother names to stealing crayons and silly things that I did, places where I wrote cuss words behind wallpaper and other places in the backs of closets that I had forgotten I had done. I drew things on walls and I got even all kinds of ways. Places where I one time took all of my brother's blankets and threw them out the window, the second story window, so he had no blankets all night long. Those things, childhood things that are just kid things, responding to impossible situations with no tools, right? But I also found out Tony A wasn't kidding when he said the child necessarily blames themselves. I wasn't lovable enough. I wasn't worthy enough. I wasn't pretty enough. And I was never going to walk like the other girls or dance like the other girls because leg braces. My mom was beautiful. She glided across the floor. Her and my dad got into dance competitions. They did all the things. I knew I would never be that, right? I needed to forgive myself. I needed to give that child in mirror work saying, "That's not yours to carry," and whispering it. "That's not yours. Never should have been yours. That's not yours. Put it down. Just be a kid." And once I go through that grief, it gives me permission to live. Now, if Lenny puts herself on her calendar, you damn well better know I get to go, right? No guilt anymore about getting to go play and have fun in my life. Because it's the kid that I'm taking out, that kid who waited so very long and who's been waiting for me, right? I moved out at 17. So I didn't think I had any excuses. Like they haven't been affecting me since I was 17. That's not true, by the way. My trauma and the dysfunction and the drama and the disease and all the rest of it's been affecting me. But I didn't know. I didn't know what I didn't know. And I need to learn how to live in the rest of the feelings wheel. I know how to be miserable, I know how to be angry. Right. I know how to just barely survive, but I didn't know how to live. And because of this fellowship, I have an opportunity to connect with all of you and to do something different. I've got two more thoughts here to wrap up. One is I love the model of recovery. I may just share it so that you can just see it. I was going to just do it, but I can do it this way. Animations. Let's see, slideshow from the current slide. The idea that AA is a triangle, and my initial recovery, the 12 original 12 steps is a triangle, and it has three sides, right? The persecutor, the victim, the rescuer. Oh no, I'm sorry. My illness has three sides: persecutor, rescuer, victim. It's the drama triangle. I'm trying to share and talk at the same time. It's not my strong suit, and so. I come in with three sides. I'm a triangle, persecutor, victim, rescuer. That's all I can do is keep popping around that, right? Whether I'm the bully or getting bullied or trying to rescue somebody from getting bullied, I just keep popping around that thing. And for me, I was a bully at work, but I was completely a victim at home in my personal life. Thank you for that timer. I appreciate it. And I could be a victim in a moment's notice. And I pop around that thing. And then I come into the original 12 steps and I learn how to make amends and I get a sober side, which turns me into a square. And I kind of plop around, right? And I was involved in all the drama in my original 12-step fellowship. I didn't miss any of it. I helped manufacture it. I helped make it because I was going from persecutor to rescuer to victim. To recovery, to persecutor, to rescuer, to victim, to recovery, because the wounded part of me wasn't healed, right? And then I found Al-Anon. Al-Anon is a beautiful place to learn how to love and how to detach with love, right? And they helped me learn to roll with it. So they rounded out the corners of that big giant square that was clunking around. And then I found ACA, and ACA squishes that circle and turns it into a heart. It teaches me self-love. It gets to the heart of the matter so that I can learn to love myself and I can learn to connect with others. I wrote this out so I wouldn't forget to say it. I urge you to notice when you are happy, to get outside, to explore, to discover, to take breaks, to learn to play, and to have fun in your life. Your inner family has been waiting a very long time for you, and it's perfectly, perfectly you. Thanks for letting me share. I have a really lovely prayer. It comes from Tony A. If you'd like to unmute and finish with me, you're welcome to join this, to join me in this prayer. Creator, light, love,
Creator, your
universe, God,
purpose, God.
higher power.
Please
Guide me
guide
through
me
healing.
through healing and recovery so that my inner child and
Child
I
and
may
I
live
live
fully
fully and spiritually.
spiritually.
And
Please
empty me
empty
of
me of fear,
fear,
self-doubt,
self-hate,
shame,
shame,
and
fill
fill me
me
with
with
love.
love. Thanks, everybody. I appreciate you. I appreciate this opportunity to be of service, and I'm grateful forever to this fellowship.